We're on page 664. We're going to start Pasuk Lamed. Okay, which I believe we did start already, but we didn't finish it. Okay, the Torah, last thing the Torah is speaking is the mitzvah of Arla, the first 3 years, and Arla to benefit from the fruits. Then the Torah says about not cutting, not doing witchcraft, not destroying the corners of your head, not to destroy your beard with a razor, not to make tattoos, and all that. And then the last pasuk was saying that you don't desecrate your daughter, but to make her a prostitute, a harlot, that the earth should not have to spit you out because the earth cannot tolerate such behavior. Then the pasuk says like this, Shabseisa tishmeiru, you should keep my Shabbos, umichgdashi tirol, and you should fear the Beis HaMikdosh, ani Hashem, I am Hashem. And like we learned, what does this mean? The Torah many times, whenever it speaks about idol worshipping, the Torah pops in the middle by saying, make sure you keep Shabbos. What does the Torah want to teach us? Because idol worshipping, or desecration of Shabbos, is equal to idol worshipping. Why? Because just like an idol worshipping basically is denying Hashem, the same thing, one who keeps Shabbos, it's called a Mechala Shabbos Befer Hesyo, openly, publicly, knows about Shabbos, desecrate Shabbos, they also have a din like a goy, because they're also doubting the fact that Hashem created the world. The concept of Shabbos is a testimony that Hashem made the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. If you don't keep Shabbos, you're basically denying the entire existence of God. And therefore, in many places, Shabbos is equal to idol worshipping, as far as a person has a din like a goy, and so on and so forth. So the Torah says, you need to keep my Shabbos, and yet, Mikdashi Tiro, you have to fear the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what does it mean, fearing the Beis HaMikdash? You're not allowed to walk into the area of the Beis HaMikdash, into Har HaBayis, the mountain of the Beis HaMikdash, with a walking stick. You're not allowed to walk with a money pouch. You're not allowed to walk with shoes into these places. Today, you can't walk into it anyway because we're all tummy. But see, even if you'd be allowed to, you wouldn't be allowed to walk in with a walking stick, a money purse. Why? Because that is all not respect for the Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi says, what's the connection between the first half of the Pasuk, Shabseisi Tishmeru, or Mikdashi Tiro? What's the connection? That even though you have a mitzvah of building a Beis HaMikdash, nevertheless, you don't do it to desecrate Shabbos. Because you don't desecrate Shabbos in the construction, oh, join the crowd. Push your way in. Okay, not least it's 2 and 2. So he says, even though you have a mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to desecrate Shabbos in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay?
Is this the place that you learn the Melechot Shabbat?
No, in the beginning of Vayakel, it also says the same thing. But again, the Torah mentions Shabbos here because of Avodah Zarah. While it's mentioned Avodah Zarah, it goes to the opposite extreme of the Beis HaMikdash, which was the home of Hashem, which was the opposite of idol worshipping. And in fact, now, okay, this is what I think we're up to. So Pasuk Lamed Aleph says like this, Al tifnu ala aveis v'ala yudeinim. You should not turn, the Jews are commanded not to turn to the sorcery of Oiv and Yudaini. These are various different types of sorcery they did. So the Medrash says, what was Oiv? It was a weird thing. They put a corpse underneath the armpit, and it would, like, sounds would come out of it. That was the witchcraft, the sorcery that they used to do. Or Yedaimi was, they put a bone for an animal called Yadua into his mouth, and all of a sudden these bones would speak and speak the future. Which is the witchcraft that the people used to do in those days. So the Torah is speaking that you're not allowed to do it. The people that did it, already it says in different places, that Hashem punishes them. Okay? In other words, the Torah is soon going to say that the punishment is karis. Okay? That is for the people that practice sorcery. People that don't practice sorcery, but go to the sorcerers, they only get lashes. They don't get karis. But the people that practice it, is actually, and there's a very interesting thing, it's very unclear, because the Rambam writes, in the laws of Avodah Zarah, that all these witchcrafts and all these sorceries are hot air, it's fake, it's not real, it doesn't even exist, only fools believe in it. And that's what the Rambam says. But all the commentators of the Rambam ask, the Torah speaks about the magicians of Egypt, Chatumim Mitzrayim, Avraham Avinu, it says, gave his children from the Keturah, you know, this shame tumah, also witchcraft and sorcery. So how could the Rambam say it's bubblemized when the Torah testifies that Paris magicians produce blood and the frogs? I said he gave them the power of witchcraft. Right. So and they try to answer what exactly what the Rambam means, that the Akan Rambam says it's shtusim. The Rambam says it's false and it's not real and it's only fools believe in such illusions.
Is he saying only fools? I hadn't heard that it's only real if you believe it to be real.
That's not what the Rambam says. The Rambam says all these things are ridiculous, a person should not believe in them. And the commentators ask on the Rambam, the bottom line is though, that we find the Torah in Israel. Anyway, so he says, Ani Hashem. I am Hashem. Now what is the pasuk over here, Ani Hashem? Okay? He says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, your God. Because a person, and many times the pasuk says this, Ani Hashem at the end of a pasuk, to teach us, sometimes a person will think, I really didn't mean to go there. I really didn't mean to trip the old man. I really didn't mean to give bad advice. So the Torah said, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God. Me, you don't play games. I know exactly what you meant and what you did and what you wanted and what you said. Me, you can't say, you can't sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, you know, to tell me that this is what I said and what I meant. So the Pasuk says, Ani Hashem, I know, okay, if you did it or not. So here's the whole thing. The truth is, the Goyim are allowed to believe in this stuff. Goyim are allowed to believe in witchcraft. Goyim are allowed to believe in all these things. Jews are not, because Jews have to go straight to Hashem. Like we spoke about the constellations and the mazolus, but...
I have a question, because in Pasuk 38 it ends with, I am Hashem, but at 31 it ends, I am Hashem, your God. Is there any significance to that difference?
Why it has the extra word Elokeichem? No, I don't know. There must be, if not, the Torah wouldn't do it. Okay? I don't know. We find many times, just in this parsha itself, okay? And what we're going to learn in 32, you should fear your God, I am God. In Pasuk, like you said, in Pasuk 28, it says, Ani Hashem. Pasuk 30, Ani Hashem. Pasuk 31, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Right, so, and before in sentence 18, it says Ani Hashem. Ani Hashem before that also. As a rule, it basically says Ani Hashem. Here, the Torah also adds Ani Hashem Elokeichem. If you go back in the Pasha earlier, you have all the various different things. Oh wow, the world is really populating.
I told you we were waiting for you.
Yeah.
It seems like almost every other, it alternates with every other pasuk.
It depends what the Torah is speaking about. It really depends what the Torah is speaking about.
Somebody brought their piggy bank for you?
Yeah. Okay, now you're going to have to stay on this side today.
Isn't the witchcraft part some kind of a desire?
The what? Goyim are allowed to believe in witchcraft, allowed to practice witchcraft. The Jews are not allowed to. For a Goy, it's not a Aveda Zara. What?
Goyim are allowed to?
Do witchcraft? Yeah, for them it's not a problem.
Uh-oh.
Why?
It's very bad.
It's very bad anyway. Let them believe in God. But if they believe in witchcraft again, instead of God, it's a problem. Here, even at the bottom, he brings on here, God has permitted the nations to pursue means of divinity, of divining the future, but Israel must seek its way through Hashem's prophets and the Torah. You can't do it through witchcraft. Okay, then the pasuk says like this, and the Torah is going, like, jumping back and forth from one subject to the next. Here it says in the pasuk, what's called respect that nobody does today. B'mnei seva tokum, you should rise in the presence of an old person. V'adarta b'nei zokin, you should honor the presence of a sage. V'yereisim elecha, and again it says you should fear God. Ani Hashem, I am God, your God. So the Gemara has an interesting argument. Is this the same mitzvah or is it two different mitzvahs? If you look at the pasuk, the Torah says, "B'mnei seva tokum, you should rise in the presence of an old person, and you should honor the presence of a sage." So are we talking about an old person who's a sage, or an old person who is even not a sage? In other words, how is the Torah talking over here? One opinion in the Gemara says that this is one mitzvah. If the person is old and a sage, you need to respect him. If he's old and ignorant, you don't need to respect him. That's one opinion in the Gemara. The second opinion in the Gemara says, no, it's two different mitzvahs. You have to respect an old man, and you have to respect a sage. Kazakin, the Gemara calls, Izesh Kana Chachma, one who actually acquired wisdom. Okay?
So, when they say sage, are we talking about Torah wisdom?
Torah wisdom. Okay. But it's interesting, Seva is 70. I think it says in Pirkei Avos, it's been shivim l'seva. In other words, in simple halacha, somebody's over 70, you need to stand up when they walk into the room. You need to honor them. Zakin, if you learn, is a scholar, no matter how old he is. No matter how old he is. We discuss, it's a very interesting discussion in the Gemara, and in the Rishonim. What happens, a child has an obligation to respect the parent. What happens if the child is a scholar and the father is not? Or the child is a greater scholar than the father. So who has to respect whom? So it's brought down, it's a very interesting thing, Shechon Aruch has mentioned, there was the famous Merame Rutenberg, who is the father-in-law of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher. It says, from the day that he became the Jewish leader, his father never came to see him anymore. Why? Because when he came to his father, he stood up for the son, because he was, and the son stood up for the father, and the father didn't want that the son should stand up for him, so he didn't see him anymore. And he didn't talk on the telephone, because there were no telephones. And he didn't text either. So it was, and because of this halacha, because of this halacha, it's very high. But these are great people. They live in a different world. The pearl today, the halacha is, I mean, in practical halacha, it's mentioned that even if the son is a bigger scholar than the father, he still has to respect the father. And more than the father should respect the son. But here's two different dinim. Here's a din. And that's why the here it says two things. V'yareisim elokecha. You have to fear Hashem and ani Hashem. Why? He says, because this is a very easy mitzvah to cheat with. A guy could say, I didn't see him. I didn't see him coming. I was looking the other direction. That's why I didn't stand up. So Torah says, fear God. God knows what you saw that you didn't see. Hashem knows if you saw him, if you didn't see him. So, in other words, that's why the Mefarshim point out, when a mitzvah is based on the intention of the person, that give bad advice, that I put the stumbling block, I didn't know he was coming, I didn't think it was a bad advice, you know, all these things, the Torah says,
V'yareisim elokecha. Okay, so what about in the case if you rise because of the sage, but you personally have no respect for that person, you rise only because it's required that you rise. So Hashem knows your intention. Your intention is that you really have no respect to honor this person.
No, the bottom line is you did stand up. So you did give them respect.
So it's the action, not
the action. Okay. Yeah.
Does one supposed to stand up in a shul for somebody?
You know, it's brought down in halacha. Let's say you have students in yeshiva, okay, and then you have a rosh yeshiva. So the rosh yeshiva goes in and out a whole day. You know, every day, every time he comes in, yo. So the answer is no, the first time and the last time. In other words, The beginning of the day and the end of the day. The rest of the day, you're sitting and learning. You're not supposed to... It shouldn't be greater than it says, Kovod of Hashem, that you only do davening in the morning and at night. You know what I mean? B'shach v'chol gomecha. You don't need to... more glory than you would for Hashem. But as far as... What? Yeah.
Is tattoo prohibition for the non-Jews too?
No, it's not forbidden.
But is it a bad thing to advise them on things the non-Jew on things that aren't necessarily forbidden?
By the way, just one second. This din, by the way, according to many opinions, is even if it's an older guy. 664. Page 664. That you should. Okay, today, people don't stand. I mean, you don't. Years ago, when you went on a bus, where you're sitting on a bus and an older person came on, or a pregnant woman came on, people would stand up and give them this. Today, that doesn't exist.
Oh, it does. I'll tell somebody to get up out of their seat and let an old person sit
there. Yeah, that's because they're afraid of you. But, but if. No, I'm saying. I understand, but on their own, they're not standing up for an older person that comes into the bus. Because respect died.
Was it men only, or was it women too?
No, a young woman would get up.
No,
but in the old one, it says it refers
old to... Old men, old women, doesn't woman, matter. Woman, both,
see,
both. Yeah.
See, that could be insulting
to stand up?
They're old.
In this day and age, how do you tell when somebody's 70? Because they don't always look 70, Rabbi.
You don't ask a man... A guy walks into a room and says, excuse me, are you 70? Or I can now stand up. If not, I'm staying sitting. It's a concept of respect, which is important for a person to have. I mean, it's, you know, kids need to say please and thank you to a parent, let's say, right? The parent doesn't need the please and thank you. The kid needs to say the please and the thank you. Okay? Today it says in Halacha, if you take technical Shulchan Aruch, technical Gemara, when a father walk or mother walks into a room, halachically a child has to stand up. That ain't happening. Okay? The reason for that is because we assume that the parents forgive, you know, they respect, and they don't want the kids to stand up. Or today it's not, it's a sign so much of respect, you know what I mean? But proud. There is a concept of respect that the Torah is demanding. The Torah is, yes, the Torah says you have to stand up, that's a sign of respect. But a sign of respect goes much more than just standing up for a prayer. You can't stand up and smack him in the face, you know what I mean? You stood up, but you're not respecting, you know? If they need help, they're carrying the package, you take away the package, you know? All these things are included in the mitzvah of, they say, v'tokum, of standing up in the presence of an old person, or a person who's a scholar. But
so, this is a Shana question. Could scholar apply to women also? Like if you
yeah, I said, why not?
The woman is very
why not?
Torah?
Why not?
Because most people associate the word sage or scholar with as a man or a masculine thing.
Why?
Because mostly men who learn.
Because in the olden times, in the time of the Gemara, the time of the Gemara, in fact, one opinion in the Mishnah says it's forbidden to teach a woman Torah. It was forbidden. In the times of the Gemara, it was unheard of that women learned Gemara. There's a whole story in the memoirs that the previous Rebbe wrote about the ancestry of the Alter Rebbe. Okay? The Alter Rebbe's mother... Her father belonged to a Hasidic group, and she knew how to learn. Her own husband came from a non-Hasidic group, and he didn't even know that she knew how to learn. She was a big scholar. The Alter Rebbe's mother was a bigger scholar than a lot of men. And her own husband didn't even know that she was a scholar until one Shabbos, they were all coming home from shul, and everybody was carrying, and everybody, you know, there was the small shtetls, they had these erevs, and somebody came running that the erev broke. Okay, so they stopped. They didn't know what to do. None of the scholarly men knew the practical halacha what to do. So the father turned to his daughter and says, "What's the halacha?" In the presence of her husband, who didn't know that she knew how to learn. And she told them what the halacha was. She knew. You carry two amas and you stop, you give it to somebody else. They carry two amas, you know, they have to mount. And they didn't know if she was right or not. See, but they had no choice, they had to trust her. When they came home, they looked and they saw that she was right. So then her secret was blown that she knew how to learn. Okay? Even today, in many circles, I'll give you an example. In the Satmar yeshivas, girls do not learn how to learn. They don't learn. They learn home economics. They learn those things that they need. They learn how to read. But to say they learn, like today, girls learn...
Like all the stuff we should teach in this,
they don't learn that stuff.
They don't learn that stuff.
Many of them learn just basic reading because in their circles, women didn't learn Torah. In Europe, they didn't learn Torah. Many of them barely know how to read.
What about negative commandments?
I'm saying they learned the laws that they needed to know. But they didn't learn things like just halacha that's not pertaining to them or other class. They didn't do it. So the concept of a woman scholar, it exists. But you're right, the term scholar is usually referring to somebody is a scholar, they think right away male rather than female. But the concept of standing up for somebody older applies to male and female. I'm sure when the prophetess Devorah walked into a room, the people stood up. I mean, you know. But the Torah said, "Yireisiv elakachu," because it's very easy for a person to say, "Oh, I didn't see the guy. I don't know. I didn't know." The Torah says, "You know, fear God and so on." Okay, next is another interesting mitzvah. When a proselyte, meaning a convert, lives amongst you, leisaynu eisay, you're not allowed to taunt him. And this mitzvah, 664. This mitzvah is the mitzvah as follows. It's forbidden to tell a ger, a convert, "Hey, you used to be a guy, you weren't Jewish at one time," and so on and so forth. It's biblical forbidden to do it. And it says, in fact, let's see the next passage because it's all connected. Ke'ezrach mikem yelochem, it should be mamish like a native amongst you, like everybody else. V'ahav to leikamecha, you have to love him just like you love yourself. Because you were aliens in the land of Egypt. And as the Gemara says, the blemish you have, don't tell your friend. The Jews were converts in Egypt. So it says, don't give the blemish that you have to somebody else. And you know, it's a very interesting, the halacha, the drama brings down also from the Gemara, based on this pasuk. It is forbidden to tell about tshuva. Do you remember when you weren't religious? It's biblically forbidden to tell about tshuva. Do you remember your past? Who are you? You know, look at your past. It's part of this mitzvah. And another, let me explain this ger concept a little bit. A ger, a convert, I'm talking about halachic, proper converts, okay? Is 100% a Jewish neshama. In fact, we mentioned this recently, not here, but in other places. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh brings down from Kabbalah, from the Arizal, that when Adam and Chava sinned in the Eitz Hadas, a lot of Jewish neshamas got lost amongst the non-Jews. A lot of Jewish souls became lost amongst the non-Jewish people. And he says, this is the concept, the secret of the converts that come back. And this is how he explains the Gemara in the famous Chidah, B'chaim Yosef David Azalai explains the Gemara. When you look in expressions of Gemara, everything in Gemara is exact. You know, when the Gemara uses an expression, it's an exact expression. The Gemara says like this, Choyla Shenisrapi, a sick person who became healed. A prisoner that became freed. Okay? It never says in the Gemara, a goy who converts. Never says a goy who converts. The expression in the Gemara is always ger shen isgayer, a convert who converts. So yes, why does the Gemara use that expression? A convert who converts? A goy who converts. That's the normal expression. A goy who becomes a Jew. A goy who converts. Why is the Gemara using the expression ger shen isgayer, a convert who converts? And they explain, our sages explain, a goy doesn't convert. A real goy does not become Jewish. And therefore it says in the Medrash, in Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, that when Hashem gave the Torah in Har Sinai, it says the souls of all generations were there, and the souls, he says clearly, of all the converts, again I'm talking halacha converts, all the converts from all generations were present when Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish people. Why? Because the neshamas of the converts are Jewish neshamas. A goy doesn't convert. And therefore, the Rebbe explained, we saw recently on Living Torah, the Rebbe said to somebody that that explains the halacha. When somebody comes to convert, so first you try to push them off, and you say, what do you need it for? And you try to get rid of them, you know. The halacha is, once you see they're serious, once you see they're serious, you have to accept them. Why? So the Rebbe explained, because if they're serious, it's a Yiddish neshama that's coming. It's not a goy that's coming. It's a Yiddish neshama. Okay? So the Torah is teaching us over here, a ged is like a regular Jew. It just, for a while, his neshama got lost amongst the goyim, but now he's coming back. He's a full-fledged Jew. And that's how the Aruch Chaim explains, you know, we learned a few weeks ago, you go out to war, you fall in love with a beautiful shiksa, and you know, you bring her into the house and all that. So Aruch Chaim says, the guys that went to war with tzaddikim, how in the world did he fall in love with a shiksa? The answer is, because she was a Yiddish girl, and he needs to bring her back. And therefore the Torah says like this, v'chiyoga itcha ger ba'artzechem, okay, you're not allowed to make him, remind him of his past, lo yiseinu eisa, you're not allowed to afflict him, torture him, ke'ezrach mikem, he has to be mamish, like a regular full-fledged citizen, Hagera God Itcham, this comment that lives with you. But after like Kamecha, you need to love him exactly like yourself. Okay? Kigerim Ayisim Eretz Mitzrayim, because you were converts in Mitzrayim. And Rashi says, the expression, the famous expression, Mum Shabach Al Teim Elechavercha. A blemish you have, don't tell your friend. So the Mefarshim ask, basically the Medrash asks, even though there's a mitzvah of loving every Jew, after Reach Kamecha, and he's a Jew, you have to love him, there's an additional mitzvah, that you have to love a ger also. And therefore it says in the Pasuk here, the Rashi says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Why does it say, I'm God, your God, plural? It doesn't say, Ani Hashem. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Rashi says, because the Pasuk's teaching me, Hashem says, God says, I'm his God just like I'm your God. There's no difference between you and him. And if you look at the remarkable things, if you look in history, and this is basically, Kabbalah talks about this a lot. You know, it says that when Yitzchak loved Esav, right? Yaakov, Rivka loved Yaakov, and Esav, Yitzchak loved Esav. So it says in the Pasuk, why did Yitzchak love Esav? Ki tzayid b'fiv. Simply it means, he hunted for his mouth, he gave him food. Esav was a hunter, he knew how to make a good meal. Esav brought Yitzchak a good barbecue, you know. And that's the simple meaning of the Pasuk. I mean, you gotta be a moron to think that that's what the Pasuk means. You talk about Yitzchak Avinu. What, he liked a good barbecue? He didn't know that Yaakov was a tzaddik. He himself said, Kol Yaakov Yadayim de Esav. You think Yitzchak was an old senile? That's people that don't learn properly think Yitzchak was an old senile man. He didn't know the difference between Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esav. And Esav, it tricked him, and he was this fool. But Rivka, you know, she would know what's going on. Yitzchak Avinu, you know, he's not a yukel. Yitzchak Avinu. So the Arizal says, it's a whole different meaning of what the Pasuk says. The reason why Yitzchak loved Esav, ki tzayid b'fiv, that is interpreted to mean, because of the words of Torah that came out of the mouth of Esav. What does it mean? The Torah words of Torah came from the mouth of Esav. Rabbi Akiva's father, Akiva ben Yosef, right? Rabbi Akiva's father was a Roman convert. The whole oral Torah, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, is based on the teachings of Rabbi Akiva. The whole oral Torah we have today, the whole everything, is the teachings of Rabbi Akiva. Okay? The famous Hillel and Shammai. Who were their teachers? Shmaya and Avtalion, it says in Pirkei Avos. Who were Shmaya and Avtalion? The teachers of Hillel and Shammai? Roman converts. Who was Unklis? Roman convert. Where did Rameir, the famous Rameir, Rameir Balanes, the famous Rameir? He came from Roman converts. All of these people came from Roman converts. So Yitzchak Avinu, when he saw Esav, it wasn't the hunting in his mouth, the food that came into his mouth. He saw there were sparks of Torah that came out of Esav's mouth, meaning the future generations of Rabbi Akiva came from Kamis, Rameir came from Kamis, Unkelis, Shmaya Naftalion. I mean, you can go through many, many people that were converts, that the whole Torah is based on their teachings. Take it even a step further. Where does David HaMelech come from? From Rus? Convert. Where does Mashiach come from? Convert. Mashiach comes from Rus. Right, from David HaMelech. So if David HaMelech came from Rus, so did Mashiach. So the Torah says, the Ger, it's a very interesting, there's a famous Igres HaRambam, there's a whole Igres HaRambam that Rambam wrote, it's already printed now in a separate book called Igres HaRambam. There was, in the time of the Rambam, there was a guy by the name of Avadya Ger Tzedek. Avadya Ger Tzedek, that was his name. And he seems, from the Rambam's letter, it seems that people were making fun of him that he was a Ger. You know? And the Rambam wrote him a letter of Chizuk, to strengthen him, you know? And the Rambam wrote to him that you are greater than the Jews. Because the Jews are B'nai Avraham Yitzchok and Yaakov. We're the children of Avraham Yitzchok and Yaakov. You're the descendant of Misha Amar V'Hoyah Ha'olam. You're a descendant of God Himself. So the Rambam wrote in a letter that don't feel inferior from the fact that you're a convert. You're even from greater, he said, in that respect, even from the Jews. And that's so the Pasuk says, in many places the Torah says this Pasuk, by the way, that you have to love the Ged, and Kigenim Yisim Eretzim Sarma Ni Hashem Alekechem. It has to be the sensitivity, and like the Rambam brings down, says Hashem has a special love for converts, and there's a special commandment to love them, in addition to the mitzvah of loving every single Jew.
This applies to the year that he converted, but after a few years he doesn't keep anything?
According to Halacha, if a ger converts properly, he's a full-fledged Jew. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Gedim, what happens if he goes back to his old ways, still full-fledged Jew. He's not a goy. He can never become a goy anymore. Once he did it right, that's it. He's stuck. But can never go anywhere.
But all of his averos end up also on the top of the head of the base dip or not?
If what?
I've heard that, like, if a ger, when they do averos, that their averos are also on, because the base dip that gave them the...
I never heard that. I don't know. I'm not saying no, I'm not saying yeah, I never heard of it. See, this religion is very interesting. Once a Jew, always a Jew. If a Jew converts to a Christianity or another religion, they are still a Jew. In Shulchan Aruch it says that if a Jew converted to another religion, God forbid, and comes back, they need what's called Geirus Midrabanan. They need rabbinic conversion. What does it mean, rabbinic conversion? That's the expression in Halacha. They need to go to the mikveh in front of a bed din, in front of three rabbis, and he has to re-accept mitzvahs again. But even if he doesn't do that, he's still 100% Jewish.
And how about the children?
What?
The children.
Also.
Because it wasn't time in Iran, many Jews, they convert to a new
religion.
This is Baha'i.
Yeah, okay, Baha'i, I know of it, yeah.
Yes, and still they are, because after that they mix with other...
Yeah, I mean, that's the big problem with a lot of history. That's the whole concept, the question with the Ethiopian Jews and the Jews from India, the Bnei Yisrael, they were called. Because a lot of these Jews left mainstream Judaism during the era of the Second Temple. They separated themselves, they moved out of Israel, they went into different countries. So the whole era of the Talmud and Mishnah, which was the oral tradition, they didn't have. They had their own traditions, but the tradition of the Gemara, which was Torah Shebaal Peh, they didn't have. So then the question was, are they Mamzerim? Are they Jewish? Are they not Jewish? This is the whole question that came up. And therefore, it was interesting when they, you know, the people didn't like it. They thought, when they were told to convert, it was to their benefit, because basically they said, you don't have a shal of Mamzer, to convert, to make sure, and you don't have a problem of a mamzer, which is a much easier situation. But that's because, I'm saying, so, if a guy converts according to halacha, whatever that means, but whatever, then once a Jew, they always stay a Jew. Even if they go back to the old ways, they're still a Jew. A rebellious Jew, a sinning Jew, if a Jew converts to another religion, they're still Jewish. But when they want to come back properly to be part of the community, they need to go through rabbinic gaiters.
But that would be if they were religious to start with. Somebody who has never lived an observant life. Mm-hmm.
So this is another debate in halacha, and what's the big problem in contemporary halacha? It's a very big problem. Some opinions say if the Beis Din that converted them was Orthodox, they're Jewish. Period. Other people say, no, if you know, to begin with, they weren't Shomer Shabbos, and they never accepted it, and they, whatever, you know, then many people say they're not Jewish. That's the big controversy going on today with me.
Yeah, but like the Jew, if the Jew goes like to another religion and comes back, you're saying he has to have it?
It depends to what extent, to what extent the person did. Like, were they baptized? Were they not baptized? Did they go regularly to church? Didn't they go regularly? I mean, there's a lot of details in these dinim, but every case is judged individually to know where you go with it. But the close of conversion are very complicated. Who was a Jew? That's the question. Who was a Jew? You know? If they're born to a Jewish mother, they're Jewish.
But no, but the thing is if you go back historically, you might find a defect in their family history if you really, in anyone's.
Yeah, but halachically, you don't have to go back that far. If a person is established that you know them to be Jewish, they're Jewish.
After how many generations?
Once they live in established, it doesn't say how long. You have to judge, every case needs to be looked at individually to what extent they practice, you know, and so on.
So if a person, you think they're Jewish and they're Jewish, and then you find out that their great-grandmother did a conservative conversion.
So then they have to go through conversion, yeah?
Well, that's what I'm saying. So on the basis of that, the only one person that you know 100% are Jewish, have no defect in their background, is a ger. Because you never know about anybody else.
In that respect, yeah. But
I'm not
I understand what you're saying, but
from a logical perspective, anybody could have a broken link somewhere in their family.
Yeah, but halachically, you don't go for the broken link unless if you know it.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you don't. You have tenure anyways.
Yeah, I mean, if people adopt, Jews adopt kids,
right,
and they don't go through a proper conversion process, the kids are goyim.
Yes.
The kids are still goyim. So then you have the whole issue, you know, who are they, Jewish, are they not Jewish? It's a big, big problem. This issue is, in America, is a constant, constant question. Half Jews, not, you know, but they call half Jews. Mother's Jewish, father's Jewish, one of the two are Jewish. In Yiddish, God, there's no half Jewish. The mother's Jewish, you're Jewish. And the mother's not Jewish, you're not Jewish.
So would you say that if there is even the slightest question, it's better to do a conversion?
A lot of times they would do it. Yeah, but then the only time you could do it, though, is if a person is willing to become religious.
Right. I mean, and then you would do it.
There are many cases of people that are in yeshivas. There are many cases of people that are in yeshivas, and people don't know about it, of people that go through doubtful conversions. Obviously, if they're from, it's not a problem. Okay? But something they find out when they're mamish in girls' schools and in yeshivas, mamish, the kid out sitting and learning, you know, they're mamish from. And then they find out that their mother's mother, whatever it was converted and not halacha, and we don't know, and there's no proof, and there's no this, and questions come up. So, in many cases, they'll tell them, let's go through a conversion, halacha, and then you don't have any doubts to play it safe. But otherwise, it could be a big problem. And we, you know, it's interesting. While we're off the topic already,
because if you're already married and you have kids, and then you find out, and then but your wife was Jewish, okay, and then you get a conversion, then there's the whole issue of you're a ger and you're not related to your daughter. Doesn't that create issues?
Yeah, good. So. So what do you do? We got to deal with the situation as it is. But, you know, if you look in Tanakh, you know, people talk about this. How did Shlomo HaMelech marry all those non-Jewish women? Yeah? Or in the famous story that people know from the movie, Shimshon and Delilah, or as it's called in English, Samson and Delilah. Right? You take it at face value, they're shiksas. If they could do it, why can't I? Huh? So the Rambam says, in the Hilchos Isurei Bia, it's a beautiful Rambam, the Rambam says, don't think for a second that Shimshon married a Shiksa. Don't think for a second that Shlomo HaMelech married Shiksas. It's not true. The Rambam says, the secret of the story is as follows. And this is what the Rambam says. There are certain times in history when the Jews were on the up, that a lot of people wanted to become Jewish. Like in the days of Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech was the ultimate bliss, prosperity of the Jewish people. So a lot of people wanted to become converts, but not for the right reason. So there was a rule from the Major Bezdin, the Rambam says, we are not accepting converts. That's it, we're not accepting converts. No converts. That was the rule. If an individual Bezdin converted people, and if they personally felt that the people were worthy, then the converts were accepted. But the official rule is no converts. So the Rambam says all of Shlomo HaMelech's wives went through conversions. Delilah went through conversion, because otherwise Shimshon wouldn't have married her. They did go through conversion. But why does the Torah call them Noshim Nochriyas? Why does the Torah call them non-Jewish women? Because later on, they went back to their old religions. Okay? But there were never not a doubt that they were Jewish. They're like a Jew that went back. And because they tried influencing Shlomo HaMelech to turn away from Hashem, so therefore, Shlomo HaMelech, they said they caused him to worship idols. Not God forbid Shlomo HaMelech worshipped idols. But they wanted him to worship idols. They were working on, but he didn't. So they called him, and that's why the Torah calls him Noshim Nochriyas. But the Rambam says there was no question that these people converted properly. But in those days, there was a general rule, no converts, because the people were coming in by the droves. Or if for that matter, you have the same thing. What happens if somebody converts for marriage? Okay? So officially, you're not supposed to accept them. What happens if Bezdin converts them? Granted, they came for marriage, but Bezdin felt they were sincere and they wanted to be Jewish. The halacha is they're Jewish. If a proper Bezdin converted them, halachically they're Jewish. You can't not believe in something that you have a whole Gemara on.
It says in the Torah about that you have to treat the converts, so how can they not believe when it's done? It says it depends on the community.
There was a certain mentality. I'll give you an example. The people that lived during the Holocaust, when the Goyim did such terrible things, as a rule, I mean, there were exceptional Goyim that were Mamish Sadikim. But when the general rule of Goyim were torturing the Jews, okay, and then one of those people became Jewish, it just, in their hearts, you know, they couldn't handle it. Yeah? You know what I mean? But the fact is, Rus was a convert, and Akiva came from, you know, all these people came from converts. In many traditions, they felt that the person is not sincere, the person doesn't mean it, and they don't want it, and they only did it for the marriage, or for the whatever other reason it is, and they were against it. But according to Allah, if a person is sincere, and Bezdin feels they're sincere, the din is, you have to accept him as a proper convert, a proper Jew. To the extent there says, you have to love him like yourself, you know, to taunt him, you know, to remind him of his old sins, because you yourself are not any better. And the Gemara takes this a step further. The same thing with the Baal Tshuva. It's forbidden to remind the Baal Tshuva. Do you remember when you ate pig? Do you remember when you did this? Remember when you did this? Is biblically forbidden because it's a new person. The Gemara says a Gershin is Gayer. A Ger who converts is like a newborn baby. To such an extent, Halacha says he can't do it. But technically, just in taking biblical law as it is, if a brother and a sister, Goyim, convert, they can marry each other. Because they're not related anymore. A mother and a son, both Goyim, who convert, technically, the mother can marry the son. Halacha says, you don't do it. Why don't you do it? Because it doesn't look right. As Goyim, the brother and sister couldn't marry each other. And now as Jews they could, so it doesn't look right. So Halacha says you can't, but technically they're not related.
They're not related, but they're both like Ben Abraham and Sarah, right?
Yeah, but they're not.
That's all Gam, but they technically they're still not considered related.
No, you have no din of relationships. In fact, I mentioned this to us. No, the daughter was Jewish. The mother was Jewish.
No, I mean adopting. By adoption. There's no law that by the adoption.
When you adopt a baby, if it's not Jewish, mm-hmm. you go through the conversion process with the child when they're a kid. On their 12th birthday, if they're a girl, or their 13th birthday, if it's a boy, Bar Bat Mitzvah, if they live that day as a Jew, then they're Jewish. But on the day of Bar Bas Mitzvah, if the girl says on her 12th birthday, I don't want this stuff, or the boy on his 13th birthday says, I don't want it, they're not Jewish.
They have to tell them.
The question is, do you have to ask them? Or if they just live the day as a Jew, and during the day you say, isn't it nice that you're putting on tefillin? And they say, yeah, well, isn't it nice? And now you're bat mitzvah. And they say, yes. That means they accepted it, and therefore they're Jewish.
How could a kid go through a conversion before bat mitzvah or bat mitzvah?
They do conversions on babies 6 weeks old. They wait. Let's say, if you adopt a baby, boy, yeah? So you give a bris, okay? And when they're... So usually, even after 6 weeks, the father or the mother, depending if it's a boy or a girl, goes into the mikveh holding the child, okay, in front of a bezdin, and they dunk the child quickly in the mikveh, in front of a bezdin, and that's the tevilah.
And is there any law that they have to tell the kids that is
at Bar Bas Mitzvah?
Is adopted or no?
That's a whole other issue. Do they have to tell them? If they're from, they have to know, because all the laws apply. They should tell them. But again, the problem is adoption. You try to hide it. Even though today it's not like it used to be. It used to be that people did not want the kids to know. Today, we live in a world where everybody knows everything.